Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's Thursday, March 23rd, and you're tuned into the Cleveland Baseball Talk Podcast. I'm Joe Noga, joined by Paul Hoynes. Hoynesy, day off for the Guardians on Wednesday as they get ready for the stretch run of Cactus League play. They've got, what, three straight night games, and four out of their final six are at night. So going to be some long nights for fans trying to get results here, as those games will be starting around 9 o'clock Cleveland time. However, we've got some news coming out of spring training, not necessarily from the team, in terms of the new rules, the pitch clock. Major League Baseball has released a memo to the teams to let them know that there's going to be some adjustments made to the way they enforce the pitch clock. But the essence of the 15 or 20 second pitch clock is going to remain the same, because they kind of want to see how it plays out in the regular season before making any drastic adjustments.
Yeah, Joe. I mean, from the recent, you know, from the data out of spring training, you know, last year the average spring training game was 3 hours and 1 minute. This year the average spring game is 2 hours and 36 minutes. So, you know, they're doing what they want to do. The pitch clock is accomplishing what MLB wants it to do.
Yeah, and from the first week of spring games to, you know, the second and third weeks of spring games, the number of pitch clock violations per game, according to Jeff Passan of ESPN, has dropped, you know, a little over two violations a game in the first week. And then since then, it's been a little over one violation per game. I'm sure Major League Baseball would like to see that number below one. You know, fewer than one violation per game. But, you know, it might take a month or so into the regular season before everybody's fully up to speed on that. With that being said, I think some of these little nuances that they're talking about in the adjustments will help some of the strange situations where you've got guys not realizing that, hey, the pitch clock was running at this point. And they're being responsive. They're responding to some of these issues that have popped up that the teams want to make sure that they talk about. So let's mention these. One of the big ones is when the PitchCom system malfunctions. They're previously they weren't able to call time. Now they'll be able to call timeout, have the umpire stop the pitch clock and address the PitchCom issue. And they're also going to make it so that pitchers can have a device to call to the catcher, which would also, you know, speed things up and make things a little more seamless.
Yeah, Joe. And, caveat in that rule is, you know, no time will be called if the pitcher forgets his PitchCom device in the dugout. He's not going to be allowed to run back and get it because MLB thinks that might be a stalling tactic. So, you know, we're going to have to watch that.
One of the things that not dealing with the pitch clock that they're talking about with the rules changes, the shift ban and challenging whether or not a player was on the infield dirt when the shift is supposed to be in effect, when the ball is being played. They're afraid that teams would, you know, try to pull a fast one, and let's say the ball is hit to the shortstop and they challenge that the second baseman wasn't on the infield dirt or was over the shift line. They're not allowed to do that now. The only player that they're able to challenge on is the guy who's making the play on the ball. So that seems to be a common sense thing. They don't want teams basically challenging other players, and there would be constant challenges of where those players are placed on the field, and that would further delay the game or just give a team an extra out.
Yeah, there will be no spy in the sky calls, hopefully, from this rule, Joe. Just the guy that fields the ball.
Right, and that's what it's originally intended to. The other thing, and this will be interesting to see how they do this, they want new standards to be enforced for bat boys and bat girls retrieving the equipment, because they think that that's going to avoid some of these pitch clock violations if the bat boys and bat girls are on and off the field a lot quicker.
Yeah, I guess, what, are they going to have the bat boys and bat girls out running sprints before the game and going through equipment drills? I mean, come on. I know it's a real concern, but geez, oh man, that seems awful picky, nitpicking.
Well, and it does make sense if you've got slower, or I don't want to say out of shape bat boys and bat girls, but you want those guys to hustle out and do their jobs, especially on balls down the left field line. Don't forget, Rick Manning had a particular ball boy down the left field line the last couple of seasons who he enjoyed calling out whenever the ball was hit down there, because the guy just didn't seem to have it together out there. But we'll see how that goes. We'll have to be timing some of these guys in there. Sprints back and forth from the dugout to be in position for each pitch.
That's right, Joe. I mean, we're going to have to have Olympic athletes as bat boys and bat girls now.
Well, we have a good time with some of the clubbies and the bat boys and stuff. And when we're down in the clubhouse during the season, so we'll see. We'll be able to talk to them and get their take on the situation and what's different for them this year. Also on brushback pitches, or when a batter takes a big swing and ends up sprawled out on the dirt, and when equipment is knocked off from a catcher or a shin guard or something like that, umpires had the ability to hold their hand up and delay the start of the pitch clock if they can do that. That should help things too.
Yeah, that's a common sense ruling. I think that's a good one. If a guy gets knocked down, he has to have time to kind of gather himself and brush himself off and get back in the box. So that makes sense.
Yeah, and prior to that, during the first couple of weeks of the Cactus League, the umpires weren't doing this, to the chagrin of some of these pitchers and hitters. And I think this was a ruling that would be, one of the first ones coming just to make things right for them that they were complaining about. In situations where pitchers are away from the mound to cover first base or to back up throws from the outfield at third or home, the 30-second clock between the batters can be delayed until the pitcher gets a chance to catch his breath and get back over to the mound. We don't want pitchers getting hurt, and we don't want pitchers, pitching before they're ready in between plays like that, especially when big plays happen.
Yeah, Joe, when the clock won't start until the pitcher is on the infield grass. And this is one of Terry Francona's big, I bet, when Rob Manfred and MLB went around to the spring training camps, this issue came up and was presented by Cleveland, because I remember Terry Francona talking about this, especially, when pitchers, had to back up the bases, and, they're out of breath, or they're hustling back to the mound. So this is a good rule. I like this tweak.
They will also be a little more lenient on catchers who are on base or had just finished the inning at the plate, in terms of getting their equipment on and getting back out. Prior to this, if a catcher was just getting out there in between innings to, take the last warm-up pitch, the umpire was stopping him from throwing down to second base, loosening his arm up. And also, I believe there's a rule in place where it says if the pitcher doesn't throw his last warm-up before 30 seconds or something like that, on that 2 minute and 30 second clock, that he's not allowed to, he doesn't get his last warm up. So, you know, these are things that if the catcher is making a reasonable effort to be ready in time, that the umpire can delay that 2 minute 30 second clock.
Yeah, that makes sense. You know, I always feel bad for catchers. You know, they get thrown out at the plate or make the last out at first base. They got to hustle back, get all their gear on, and then jump back out behind the plate. You know, it's not like you know, the clock. You know, the clock is really ticking on those guys, and so hopefully, you know, this gives them a little room to a little elbow room to operate.
And finally, so now when the hitters call timeout, because they're allowed one timeout per at bat, previously the clock was starting from 15 seconds when the player stepped back in the box, and the pitchers could potentially hold the ball on the mound for a longer period of time if they were ready and waiting for the pitcher to step or for the hitter to step back in. Now under the new guidelines, regardless of where the batter is standing or where he's ready, he has to indicate to the umpire that he's ready to resume play, and then the umpire will tell the clock operator, hey, let's wind the clock and go.
Yeah, so if the batter's standing, what, on the on-deck circle, he can tell, okay, I'm ready, and then he jumps back and, you know, sprints over to the box and gets ready to hit, I guess. But, yeah, this is that's going to be interesting to see how that one works.
So these are what we talked about, the nuances and the subtle little tweaks that would be happening. And we'll probably expect to see a few more of these come out within the first couple of weeks of the regular season games when they start. There might be some weird situations in those first couple of week games. But, you know, once we get to about late April and, you know, early May, I think they're expecting that this system will be running smoothly and there won't be, you know, much griping or arguing about it.
Yeah, Joe, I think they found the same things in the minors when they introduced these rules. You know, it took a month. It took, you know, like 4 or 5 weeks to the players to adjust. And then, you know, it went along pretty smoothly. And I'm guessing that, you know, the same thing will happen in the big leagues. You know, they've got a lot of players that have already played under these rules. You know, you've had all the spring training, 30 games of spring training to adjust. You know, there's going to be some hiccups. There's going to be some, you know, mistakes made. There's going to be some arguments. But I think by April or May, I mean, you know, by May or you know, by May, this thing is, you know, this thing will be, you know, everyone will have adjusted.
You know, in the NFL, they have a play clock. In the NBA, they have a shot clock. It makes sense. You can bemoan and resist and, you know, say you don't like the pitch clock all you want, but this is how professional leagues package their games and, you know, produce the best product for fans. They want games that are 2.5 hours. They're going to get games that are 2.5 hours. That's how they do things, and that's what this pitch clock is aimed at getting. It's not going to mean that we won't still see, you know, walk-off games and, you know, celebrations and, you know, all the things that make baseball exciting and fun to watch. But it's just going to be, you know, packaged a little more tightly. And I think it's a good thing in theory. Let's get the kinks worked out so that it you won't even notice it after, you know, by this time next year with the that's the hope.
Yeah, definitely, Joe. And, you know, it's, you know, it's this has been a long time coming. You know, and like you said, there's going to be people that are going to grumble about this. But, you know, when it's April 7th or April 18th and it's, you know, 40 degrees at a Progressive Field, you know, the last thing you want to see is like a 3 hour and 30 minute game. So I think these games are going to be moving and people are, you know, like you said, they're going to be packaged tightly. The all the fat has been, you know, cut away and we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, the only group that I can, you know, conceivably see never complaining one word about the way this goes is deadline sports writers who a 2.5 hour game when first pitch is 6:05. I think that's yeah, it's a beautiful thing, you know, to be done by 8:30 on a weeknight. So looking forward to the first couple of, you know, weeks of home games for the Guardians. All right. News out of Minnesota Twins camp, as we heard, that George Polanco and Alex Kirilloff will open the season on the injured list. This is the the worst nightmare for the Twins. It happened to them all year last year, and helped the Guardians, run right past them for a division title was injuries. You've got Byron Buxton, who's just now getting into playing Major League spring training games. He's going to DH for most of the season because, he's still working his way back from injury. What do we think about what losing Polanco and Kirilloff does to the Twins' chances?
Well, Kirilloff, has that wrist injury. He's had surgery on it a couple times, and he just hasn't responded to it. Responded well to treatment and his recovery. He was supposed to be the opening day first baseman. Polanco's, still has a knee injury. Still, hampered by a knee injury from last season. He was their starting second baseman and, really good hitter, a guy that always performs well against Cleveland, so that is not good news for the Twins. They're going to have to scramble, and and they just traded Luis Arraez. Yeah, the Arraez. So, and he could have probably helped them out at first base or second base.
Right. What the Twins offseason, as we were told by our friend Dan Hayes, the Twins offseason was all geared towards building depth to avoid these situations, to avoid the loss of, continuity when, players are injured. So they wanted to be deeper at certain positions. But like you said, they wind up trading away a player that could have serviced them in both positions that they now have a deficit. So it should be interesting to see how that will play out. The Guardians got Andrés Giménez back from his tour with the Venezuelan team in the World Baseball Classic. You had a chance to talk to Giménez. What did Giménez say about the experience of playing in the World Baseball Classic?
Well, he loved it, Joe. He was really pumped up. He loved, he said the best moment was hearing the national anthem, the Venezuelan national anthem played at a big league ballpark. It had to be cool playing with all your countrymen and your fans are packing the stadium. And Venezuela had a great run. What'd they go 4-1 and they won the pool, pool D, and they lose to Team USA in the quarterfinals. But, they just had a great run. And he said, I've heard that, some guys, when they play in the WBC and they go deep into it, they get back to spring training. It's kind of a letdown, because, you're playing in spring training games in front of 4,000 people. And, and even it takes a while to readjust. But he said that, the work he did in the off season, the early work in the off season and playing, in the WBC against, top level competition, he thinks it's going to help him, go into the regular season, ready to win from day one.
By the time the next World Baseball Classic rolls around, if Giménez is still part of the organization, if Brian Rocchio is still part of the organization, because that's another Venezuelan player there, do you think the Guardians could lose two middle infielders to the team Venezuela?
Yeah, sure. I think they could. It seems like I'm not the greatest fan of the WBC, but, the overall impression across the board has been about this one in particular has been great. I think the players love it. It's a break from the tedium of spring training. And, we'll see how, let's watch and see how the main players from every team, how they perform at the big league level through April and May and see if there's, if it helped them or hurt them. That's going to be an interesting data trail to watch.
Well, I had seen where the headliners from Tuesday night's championship game, Shohei Ohtani and Mike Trout. Ohtani was going to head back to Angels camp and pitch in a B league game to keep him, on schedule to be in the rotation for the Angels. But then Trout was just going to completely skip going back to Angels training camp and head right to Los Angeles, where he'll play in their exhibition games right before the season. But not go back to camp and avoid maybe that letdown that you were talking about there. So we'll see how the major players bounce back. But Tuesday night was certainly still something that everybody's talking about. And you know, a lot of fun if you're a baseball fan. Before we get going here, Ryan LaVarnway, former catcher who spent time with Cleveland, announced his retirement after 15 seasons. LaVarnway, probably best known in baseball circles as the you know, the leader of Team Israel in the World Baseball Classic, and he did that again this year.
Yeah, the man with the yellow bat, Joe. Remember when he came up for like a cup of coffee with Cleveland? He had that yellow bat, and he could swing it pretty good. He wrote his farewell to the fans and said, you know, the only thing he excelled at was refusing to quit. He said he wasn't fast. He didn't have a great arm. He could hit a little bit, but he never quit. He never gave up on himself. And he thanked the people who convinced him that he was better than he really was.
Well, he was a fun guy to be around and a nice guy to cover. He didn't get in the way of what was going on here in Cleveland when he was up and down. So just, you know, best wishes to him as he moves on to the next chapter. If you get a chance, log on to cleveland.com/subtext. Sign up for our subtext updates. Hoynsey is out there in Arizona now. He'll be in the clubhouse. He can text updates and answer questions. And if you've got Hey Hoynsey's forum, it's the best way to submit them. Either log on to cleveland.com/subtext, sign up for $3.99 a month, or send a text message to 216-208-4346, and they'll send you back a link to sign up that way. Actually, it's a really good gift if you want to gift it to a friend or family member during the season. It's a nice way to keep them informed about what's going on with the Guardians. Hoynsey, night game tonight, and then you know, back at it again on Friday. We will catch up with you one more podcast this week on Friday morning. Oh, we'll talk to you then.
All right, Joe.